Good morning. Isn't it wonderful to be alive? Isn't it wonderful to be here this morning? And as we look around and you this morning, as you've maybe welcomed some people that maybe you haven't met before, maybe you have never seen before, hopefully you've taken just a second to say hello, introduce yourself, and greet them. We are this morning going to be in Ezra chapter 6, so if you want to open up your Bible, go ahead and open up to Ezra chapter 6. That's where we're going to spend our time together this morning. I will offer one apology real quick. Jack read an announcement that was for me, and the sign-up sheets are not actually on the kiosk out in the foyer. I forgot to lay those out. Some of you probably already realized that. For the area-wide coming up, that's my fault. I apologize. But if you're interested in helping, I will have it out. And if you like to make some potato casseroles or baked beans or you like to bake cookies, we will need all of those things in a couple of weeks. So be contemplating that, thinking of that, and I'll have those out. God's providential hand. You know, a lot of times when we hear this word providence, I think a lot of times we don't understand what the word means. We have allowed other people to tell us, try to define things for us, and sometimes we just don't get it. We don't understand it. Sometimes we think about God's providence as God is this master puppeteer, and He makes everything happen. We say, it's out of our control. God's providence led us here. God's providence is the one who caused all of these things to happen, and that's not necessarily 100% accurate. Because God does not force anything, any decisions upon us. God gives us free will, but God does lead us. He does put things in our path, especially when we ask Him to. When we ask for His guidance, when we ask for His leadership in our life, God will do those things for us. Now, I think it's a little easier to understand when we get somewhere in our life and we look at that one little spot maybe in our life, we go, how did we get here? Why does my life look like this? Where did these people come from that are in my life? How did all of this work out? And sometimes we don't really understand that. So sometimes it's really good to go, like maybe in a book, you look at the end. How many of you have ever read the last chapter of a book first so that you know what the ending is? Anybody ever do that? Yeah? All right. You're cheaters. Now, sometimes we want to see the end of it. I've even actually seen the end of a movie before and go, you know what? That ending was pretty good. I might want to go back and see how all of that came about to get there. Sometimes it's better to go to the end of the story and work our way back to actually understand God's providence. Now, we have some guests this morning that through God's providence led here. Parker's sitting back, right back here. And if you haven't been by to take a little look, our newest addition, our baby, is, and I say ours because I think probably everyone in this auditorium has prayed that she would be here, that her mother would be smiling while she held her right here. And if we can't celebrate that, isn't it an awesome thing? And we look at things and we see families in here right now. Moose or Mark Everett, one of my friends. I love this guy. If you haven't met him, and I don't know what you call him, if you call him Moose, which is what most people call him, or Mark Everett, he brought someone today as well. His mother is here. Faith is back there. And if you haven't gotten to meet her, and maybe you've been one of those ones that's been praying for her, and you have an opportunity to meet her, how did she get here? God's providence has led us to this day, this time, this place together. Now, I can't tell you every single step that God has done in your life to get you here, but you're here. This is where we are. And God has done things in our life to help us get where we are.
sometimes we miss out. Sometimes we don't get. Sometimes we don't see God leading us. Sometimes we don't see those providential steps that God puts out there, and we miss some of them. And we end up somewhere we wouldn't be had we paid attention to the things God was leading us in. You see, there's our choice in the matter. We have that choice.
But I'm telling you, God is here. God always has been, and God will lead His people if we will allow Him to lead us. So in Ezra chapter 6, when we look at this story and we understand a little bit, and those that who weren't here when I first started out the book of Ezra, just a little bit of history, you know, the people are in captivity. Jeremiah told them they were going to go into Babylonian captivity and they were going to be there for 70 years. If they didn't change their attitudes and the way their lifestyles, God was going to punish them. And He did. He sent them away. But He said, there's going to be a remnant, a small portion of My people I'm going to bring back. And the 70 years has been served, and now the people are starting to go back. And we know that Cyrus has said, made out a decree and said, y'all can go back in the first few chapters. And then Artaxerxes comes into power, and the people who are against the Jews and rebuilding the temple go to him, and they do all these things, and Artaxerxes stops the temple's construction. And then Cyrus comes on board. Darius becomes king, and now we're here when Darius is there, and the people are coming to Darius. And so here's a little bit of background. So we get to chapter 6. But we're going to do it a little bit differently than normal. Instead of beginning at chapter 6, verse 1, we're going to skip to the end of chapter 6 and look at verse 19. Look at verse 19 with me. The exiles observed the Passover on the 14th of the first month. For the priests and the Levites had purified themselves together. All of them were pure. Then they slaughtered the Passover lamb for all the exiles, both for their brothers and the priests and for themselves. The sons of Israel returned from exile, and all those who had separated themselves from the impurity of the nations of the land to join them to seek the Lord God of Israel ate the Passover. And they observed the Feast of Unleavened Bread 7 days with joy, for the Lord had caused them to rejoice, and had turned the heart of the king of Assyria toward them to encourage them in the work of the house of God and the God of Israel. So you fast forward to the end of the story and you look at it and you see them and they're worshiping. And it says that they're celebrating the feast of the Passover, the feast of unleavened bread. And if you look at that and you're just getting a little shot of the picture, you may not even understand what's going on. Because how many people have celebrated the Passover? How many people have celebrated the feast of unleavened bread? How many of these Jews have even done that right now? I don't know. But you look at it, you know the history. The Passover came when they were being led out of Egypt, right? And God said, you're going to take the lamb, and you're going to kill this lamb, and you're going to sprinkle some blood on the doorposts, and you're going to eat this meal, fully clothed, bags packed, ready to go, because I'm going to take you into the promised land. And from this time forward, every year, you're going to do this to remember what I'm doing for you. And then for 7 days, you're going to enjoy a feast of unleavened bread. Holy convocation, it says in Leviticus and in Exodus, when it's explaining what these feasts and how they're supposed to be done. They're supposed to be a get together and an assembly of the people together, getting ready for this. It's very, very holy. This is a very important time. And we see this little picture of it and we go, wow, they're enjoying this. They're celebrating. What does a celebration mean? How many of you celebrate in your life with a big frown on your face? They're not either. When you see them, they're celebrating. They're doing some great things. And they're smiles on their faces. These people are excited. They are home. They're in their homeland. Some of them who have never been there before. But they're there now. And this is their home. And God has been faithful to them. And they're celebrating. How did they get here? Because you see, it wasn't very long ago they weren't here. They're in captivity. I'll begin you. Well, then you have to back up just a little bit and see a little bit more of the story. In earlier in that chapter, in verse 13, he talks about, well, let's go to 14. He says, the elders of the Jews were successful in building through the prophesying of Haggai the prophet and Zechariah. And they finished building according to the command of God of Israel and the decree of Cyrus and Darius and Artaxerxes, king of Persia. This temple was completed on the third day of the month of Adar and was the sixth year the reign of King Darius. And the sons of Israel, the priests, the Levites, and the rest of the exiles celebrated the dedication of this house of God with joy. And they offered for the dedication of the temple of God 100 bulls and 200 rams and 400 lambs. And as a sin offering for all Israel, 12 male goats corresponding to the number of the tribes of Israel. Then they appointed the priests to their division and the Levites in their robes for the service of God in Jerusalem as it was written in the book of Moses. Celebration of completion. So the Passover feast, all feasts are going on, but you look back a little bit earlier and you see, all right, here's why they're doing it, is because the temple's been rebuilt. That which is the central, the core of their religious identity, because this is God's house. Now, not that, and just as the passage Don read just a moment ago, God doesn't dwell there. Solomon said, no, we can't put God in a house and keep Him in there. That can't happen. But it is God's house. And so when they're going there to worship, we know God is present with us because this is His house. We're going to worship to Him. We're going to sing praises to Him. We're going to offer sacrifices to Him. The temple has been restored. The temple has been completed. 20 years they've been waiting since the foundation was laid for the temple to be restored. And it's restored. So now we get a little bit bigger picture, and the completion is there, and joy, celebration with joy is going on. And they offer all of these things, all of these sacrifices. Can you imagine how long it would take to offer those sacrifices? Just think about it for a second. What does he say? 100 bulls. Bull's a pretty big animal. 100 of them. 200 rams. 400 lambs are offered in celebration. This is praise to God. We're singing, as we would sing songs of praise, they're singing, but they're offering sacrifices of praise. Hundreds and hundreds of animals to praise the God that they serve. The God that has brought them back and has allowed the completion of this temple where they can come and worship Him. Joy is there. This is serious. But I like that verse 14. Look at it again with me. What does he say? And the elders of the Jews, what? Were successful. Why were they successful? Why was the temple completed? How did it happen? You know, they went up against enormous odds that they were not going to be successful. They were fighting against everybody around them. All the peoples of the lands around them, they were arguing with them and fighting with them. And those people were telling them, you can't do this. You can't complete this. And those people were writing letters to the king and saying, you need to stop this because you know what's going to happen when you do this, when you allow this to go on. You know what's going to happen. You're not going to get any more taxes. They're not going to be faithful to you. They'll get this built, then they'll build a wall around it, and then they'll be a mighty kingdom again, just like they used to be. Is that what you want? And so all of these things are going on, and eventually, as we know, and earlier in this book and in history, the temple was stopped. They were successful. I love that verse. They had success. Why did they have success? Not because they're great. Not because they were mighty warriors. Not because they defeated the kingdoms around them. But because God was leading them. Now, I don't understand why God does some of the things He does in this life.
I don't understand why God allows certain things to happen. But He does. But I know at every turn in our life, when we look for it, God is guiding us. God is leading us. God is opening doors for us and saying, you need to go through this door. You need to walk down this hallway. You need to take this road. Now, He may use someone, He may use Bill in my life to help me go down that right road. He may use someone else. He may use a child in your life who says something. You know how children are, they're just going to say what's on their mind, right? And He may use a child in your life to get His point across to you as He's trying to get you to listen to Him and where He wants you in this life. Sometimes He'll do that. But sometimes the song we sing, we have to be still and let's listen to God's guidance. They had success because Haggai and Zechariah's faithfulness, God put them there to prophesy. Because God's command, because God put kings in place that He wanted in place, they had success. The temple is completed. They're joyfully worshiping God, and now they're starting to celebrate their feasts again. But how did they get to that point? How did they get there? Well, you back up just a little bit more, and you go back to the beginning of the chapter, and it gives us a little bit more of the picture. And every time we paint a little bit more, we see a little bit more. God's painting this beautiful picture that we can understand more and more and more in our life. Now then, it says, King, beginning in chapter 6, verse 20, it says, King Darius issued a decree, and a search was made in the archives where the treasures were stored in Babylon. Now, he's responding to the people, writing to him and saying, these people shouldn't do this. You shouldn't allow these things to go on. There's concern about the building of the temple by all these people. And that's what's going on in chapter 5. And so in chapter 6, he says, let's stop and let's go. Now here, the enemies of the Jews are telling him this, and he's listening, so he says, hold on, let's just do a search. Let's go back and look through history. How many of you have ever had to do research in a really big university library? Anyone have to do any of that? Anyone? Not very many. How easy is it? Did you enjoy doing that? I got lost more than once and I had to go grab someone and say, okay, where's whatever this is called where I have to go and start looking up this word to find this and to find this number and to go here. It's not easy. And so he says, you go up there, you go start looking, and they didn't have computers back then. It was on a shelf somewhere. There was a decree somewhere. And he says, go find it. Now, how long do you think that's going to take? If you start looking through books and scrolls and roll after roll, scroll after scroll, and trying to read something, how long is it going to take you to find it? And sometimes it takes me an hour just to find my keys. How long is it going to take to find it? But he says, go find it. And they find the decree. And it says in verse 3, in the first year of King Cyrus, Cyrus the king issued a decree. And then it goes down and he reads it and he says, okay, this is what's supposed to happen. And so God led them to find that scroll and he brings it out and he starts reading it. And Darius is reading this scroll and he says, oh, this is what was supposed to happen. This is what Cyrus said was supposed to happen. So it better happen. Then he quiets. Look at verse 6. He says, now, therefore, he talks to the leaders in the province that have been causing all the issues. He writes a decree to them, and he sends them a letter, and he says, all right, and he calls them out by name, and he says, all right, you and you, listen to me. You asked my permission. You've given me advice. Now as the king, I'm going to tell you something, and I hope you're listening. You better listen to me. That's what Darius says to them. The end of that verse, he says, keep away from there. Don't go back and bother them again. Do you understand me? Does he beat around the bush? Does he say, you know what, guys? Maybe y'all ought to let up on them just a little bit. Maybe you ought to be a little nice. Maybe you ought to take them out to lunch sometime and ask them if everything's okay. And y'all can renew and start over in your relationship. No, he doesn't. He says,
you stay away from there. Don't you dare go back. And now you can imagine, you know what?
Maybe as a parent, you're telling your child this, don't you dare go near that again. And you think, why should I even have to tell them that? You ever think I'm telling my child something? Why should I have to tell my child not to play near a swimming pool in the middle of wintertime? Why should you have to tell your child something like that? Do you think you should? John, do you think you'd have to tell Kate?
Okay.
But as a parent, you go, don't play near a swimming pool. Then you think, you know what? I better make this point with an exclamation point. How do you do that? How do you make that point with an exclamation point on the end of it?
Look what he says in verse 7. Leave this work on the house of God alone. Let the governor of the Jews and the elders of the Jews rebuild this house of God on its site. Moreover, I'm issue a decree concerning what you are to do for these elders of Judah in the rebuilding of this house of God. The full cost is to be paid to these people from the royal treasury out of the taxes of the provinces beyond the river, and that without delay. What he says is, not only do you leave them alone, but the taxes you're supposed to be paying is going to go to them to let them finish this house. Now, are you getting my point? Are you understanding what I'm telling you? That's what the king is saying. I'm not fooling with you this time.
This better not come before me again. It better not happen again. You better do things what I'm telling you to do. Verse 9, whatever is needed, both young bulls and rams and lambs for burnt offering to the God of heaven, and wheat and salt and wine and anointing oil, as the priests in Jerusalem request, it is to be given to them daily without fail.
Don't you dare stop anything that they tell you that they need. Don't you dare go over and tell them what they should or shouldn't be doing. Don't you hinder the work anymore. It's over with. I'm not fooling with you anymore. How did they get to the feast, the Passover? How did they celebrate the Feast of the Unleavened Bread? How did they get there? How did they have all that joy as they were looking at the temple's completion and offering all those sacrifices? Where did all those animals come from? Where did the money come from to build that temple? Where did all of those things come from? God put a king in place that was willing to go search for a decree that was made by another king God put in place. And then he wasn't afraid to tell the people, this is what you're going to do. You're not only going to leave them alone, you're going to finance all of what they're doing anyway. Darius is introduced to the king. God let Darius know who actually is in control. Read down verse 10 with me. We're just about finished. Verse 10. That they may offer acceptable sacrifices to the God of heaven and pray for the life of the king and his sons. I want them praying for me. Here's the king. How powerful is that? Don't hinder them. You help them build this temple so that they can offer acceptable, so that the sacrifices that they're giving to God is going to go to Him, and He's going to accept those things, and He's going to listen to them. Because I want them praying for me and my offspring as well. How many times have you ever had someone ask you, will you pray for me? Do they believe that your God is big enough to answer prayers? I hope so. I hope you believe your God is big enough to answer prayers.
I hope you believe that God is big enough to guide you and lead you throughout this world in your life and everything that you're about. And when you back up one day and you look at who you are and where you are, you've learned to back further away than that one little spot and see the big picture of how God has guided you through this life. Who's God put in your life to help you? Who's God put in your life? How has God providentially led you? Verse 12, and we'll close this morning. May the God, who has caused His name to dwell there, overthrow any king or people who attempts to change it, so as to destroy this house of God in Jerusalem. I, Darius, have issued this decree. Let it be carried out with all diligence. May God rule. Where are you in your life this morning? Who's ruling in your life? And when you look at your life right now, today, where you are right now, how did you get here? How many times do you stop and think about someone that God has placed in your life last week, last year, 10 years ago, 20 years ago? Who has God put in your life to help you get where you are today? God leads us providentially. God does things for us, to care for us, and to take care of us. May the God who has caused His name to dwell there, may the God who has caused us in this life to get where we are, overthrow anyone who tries to change who He is in our life. Do you know who Jesus Christ is? That's ultimately where we are. He is the temple. He is the one. He is the Holy One. He is the one that we find our identity in. We have life. We are who we are because of Him and no one else. And as He said, as Darius is saying to them, may God overthrow anyone who would try to negate the Lordship of Jesus Christ in your life. This is serious business. Does God rule in your life? When you leave this place, you're going to go into a world that's going to do everything they can to sidetrack you, to cause you to give up, to look at all the problems and issues of your life and say, I can't overcome this. We'll never do this. And your life will be put on hold just like the temple was for 20 years. They put the restoration of that temple on hold because of people. And it took a king who wasn't even a Jew to say, we can't do that. May God always rule in our lives. That's what He said. May God always rule in your life. And where you are, is God ruling in your life today? Have you given your life to Him? Have you made Him the Lord and Master of your life? The Savior of your life? You can do that today. And have all the privileges and blessings. And you can look and say, boy, God has providentially led me through this life. He has blessed me. He has given me everything that I have. He wants to do that. But He can. Unless you're willing to accept Him. You have to be willing to accept Him in your life. Are you willing to do that today? If you need to respond to Him, don't worry. Give your life to Him right now. Won't you do it? If you need to respond publicly, do it right now while we stand and we sing.